I will call this meeting of the Children and Families Finance and Policy Committee meeting to order. Representative Altendorf, have you reviewed the minutes for March 18th?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I move the March 18th minutes.
Representative Altendorf moves the minutes from March 18th to be approved. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Chair Katiza Batum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just noting the result of the division on the House File 4125. The vote should have been 7 ayes, 4 nays, and 1 excused absence. There was 3 GOP members who are not here, and only one of them was excused. So we can make that change.
Yes.
Kim?
Well, yeah.
It's not that. No, all of our members were here.
Yeah.
Nano, Zalesnikar, and McDonald were gone.
Yes. No, it was, I think the proper, you're correct on the number, 7-4. I am not positive.
How we note that?
Well, I am, in my days as a committee legislative assistant myself, we would just list the numbers. But I guess we will not approve the minutes. And consult on the proper documentation for that.
Okay.
Good catch. So
we'll come back to that. Thank you.
No. The motion does not prevail. The minutes are not adopted. We'll go to that since it was moved. All right. We will now move to Representative Bakeberg's amazing bill. I will move House File 4384 to be re-referred to the General Register. There are no amendments, so Representative Bakeberg, if you'd like to introduce your bill.
Thank you, Chair West and Co-Chair Katiza Watun and members. My name is Ben Bakeberg. I have the privilege to represent the communities of Prior Lake, Jordan, and Shakopee. House File 4384 requires that training that's already required be interactive and does not consist only of reading and viewing content. Under current law, staff that work at licensed child care centers, family daycare providers, certified licensed exempt child care providers, including substitutes and unsupervised volunteers, must receive training in abusive head trauma before caring for school-aged children. So we're talking about training for abusive head trauma. So why do we need this? Currently in Minnesota, there is not a requirement to check for understanding after someone completes the training. The state allows for video training, but there's no interaction and there's a self-attestation of completion. So simply put, Minnesota currently requires the completion of abusive head trauma training without a knowledge validation or a demonstration of competency on the training that they just went through. Today, I have the privilege of having Crystal McNally here to testify. Crystal and her husband, Brendan McNally, are the founders of Never Shake Minnesota. And co-chair, Chair West, I would move to testimony.
Thank you. Ms. McNally, please proceed with your, introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Crystal McNally, and I'm here today on behalf of Never Shake Minnesota in support of HF 4384, a bill that would strengthen education on abusive head trauma, also known as shaken baby syndrome. As you may remember from my testimony last week, my son is a survivor of abusive head trauma. His injuries were severe and lifelong, and all this happened at the hands of our in-home daycare provider. Since that terrible day in 2017, my husband and I have been dedicated to improving education around abusive head trauma for our family and for many other families harmed by a frustrated caregiver. A video alone is not enough. It does not ensure meaningful education has actually taken place year after year. It is not a checkbox and should not be. Minnesota is one of the least prescriptive states in the country when it comes to validating knowledge of abusive head trauma. Our state does not require a post-test, a passing score, or any sort of demonstrated competency. By contrast, dozens of other states require at least a quiz or a test to verify that caregivers actually understand the material. Each year, an estimated 20 to 25 babies in Minnesota are shaken. The cost is enormous for families, for our healthcare system, for our state resources, and most importantly, the cost is measured in the quality of the baby's lives and the baby's future. We also know that 1 in 4 abusive head trauma victims die, and that cost is also enormous. We have to ask ourselves, why would we not invest in stronger education for those entrusted with the care of our most vulnerable, our babies, and our children? Thank you for your time and consideration. I urge you to support HF 4384, a simple way to ensure education, the education we're requiring is quality and long-lasting.
Thank you, Ms. McNally. Are there any members of the public here who'd like to testify on House File 4384? Good to have you. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Cindy Cunningham, family child care provider in St. Paul, and I'm also the public policy chair for the State Association Lead-In Care. I appreciate this move to the hands, to the response. I did not intend to testify, so this is all winging it here. I will say, though, during the safe sleep time period in 2014, I was a primary testifier and worker for family child care when those laws were put into place. Just as a clarification, there is interactive, responsive, excuse me for terminology, training that is developed by the commissioner that family child care is required to take every other year. There is the video is an alternative on the second year, but there is already a training available that anyone can take on develop that does do that responsiveness to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham. It is good to hear that. Considering we always like to invent costs here at the legislature, and if it already exists, there should be no cost. Any other members of the public? All right, I'll close public testimony and move on to member discussion. Members, any discussion? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for bringing this, Representative Bakeberg, and for the testimonies. It's definitely something important. I just wanted to clarify a little bit, and maybe the previous audience member could also come back up and describe, because I think if we're going to try to, you know, put a finer point on this, then my question is, I mean, what does interactive really mean? You know, is it just clicking a button? You know, is it really using props? You know, so what is interactive mean? And I know we don't want to get to maybe too prescriptive, but you know, does there need to be a little bit more clarity on that?
Representative Bakeberg.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the question. And that's actually it's a great question in the definition piece of it. So every year in my professional role as a school principal, I go through trainings that I'm required to do: bloodborne pathogen, seizure response, first aid. And each of those training modules have an interactive component to it, where I walk through I watch an asynchronous video, and then I have to respond to some questions. So that's really the intent. So if we need some language to clean up, I'm more than willing to do that. And Ms. Cunningham gave an example of that as well. And you know, I would.
Yeah, we go around to daycares and provide training as well. So every couple years, so if anyone wanted us to come and talk, we could talk at length about abusive head trauma. And I think really connecting with someone's story makes it even more impactful and meaningful. If I've been a provider for 20 years, am I really taking new stuff away from those training modules?
So just quickly on that, I had the same exact question. Where I find the most comfort in the language is must not consist only of reading and viewing, because that's a big issue of just like, here's a document, nothing happens. Actually having anything beyond that is an improvement when it comes to this. Representative Lee.
Sure, and if that's, you know, if that's acceptable, then okay, thanks.
Representative Perez-Vega.
Yeah, is there a fiscal note attached to this? Like, how much would all this cost?
I don't believe so.
Doug?
Mr. Berg.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, members, there is an open fiscal note request on this. The department has not finished it yet. I only look at it and think that there must be some way that the department has to verify whether the training is active, interactive rather than just viewed. But I don't know that yet.
Representative Baker.
Yeah, I would just say that right now we currently attest that we've done the training. So just like in my training that I do in my principal role, we handle that internally and attest that it's done. Currently, there's a self-attestation that the training has been completed.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I would say the cost is probably priceless for this. No matter what the cost is, it's priceless. Just question, Representative Baker, is there any other training that we would, that you know of, or your testifier, that they aren't doing, that we think, why aren't they doing that, much like your bill today?
Representative Baker.
Yeah, I would allow Ms. McNally to answer that.
Yeah, no, I think for the abusive head trauma and then the sudden unexpected infant death, I think those go hand in hand, and so I think those are great trainings to have.
Mm-hmm. Representative McDonald?
No, that's good. Well, absolutely, very good training. I was just curious if there's any other training that maybe that we know that perhaps Resident Baker that you do in schools that we should be doing in daycares that we're not doing. Because I would have thought that we'd be doing this already, this training. So thank you for bringing the bill forward. That was my question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member discussion? Chair Katizawatu.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Bakeberg, for bringing this forward. I am a little bit confused by Ms. Cunningham's testimony, just saying that there already is some sort of coverage on this. And so I'm just hoping, I don't know if anybody from the department is here that can give us a little bit more clarity on what the current requirement is and how I totally would support moving what we have into more of an interactive situation if what exists right now is not. But I just am hoping that maybe we can get a little bit more guidance on if it's required annually or if it's required every other year. That would be helpful.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Shayna Morse, Legislative Director covering Early Childhood at the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. And I have the unfortunate task of saying that the department is analyzing the cost for this. Currently, there's an open fiscal note. That was our understanding. The reason for that is because while we do have an interactive course that's available to Ms. Cunningham's testimony, it's not required. And so that does run through a third party. And we're trying to analyze the cost that it would take if participation in that increased.
Chair Katizawatu.
Thank you. That is very helpful. So even just moving it from being optional to being required if the training already exists and kind of getting some of the detail on that. My other question, perhaps for the testifier, this proposal would only mandate this training for child care providers, but I'm just curious, you had mentioned the number of head trauma that we experience in our youngest Minnesotans on an annual basis. Was that number specific to child care incidents, or that was just statewide?
That's statewide,
yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so we do know that a lot of abuse happens inside the home, and you guys know that. But I think that this is kind of the low-hanging fruit. Like, would I love every parent to go through this training? Absolutely. Every caregiver to understand that frustration happens and baby's development? Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just closing thoughts here. I appreciate that and just wanted to clarify on what the number situation was. I was a former licensed foster parent, and so we had annual trainings that we had to go through. And I often wonder that, you know, when we had our biological child, and I think that's kind of the collective experience of anybody who goes through like labor and delivery at the hospital, and they're like, wait, you're just going to let me take this child home now? And I think that that's perhaps a part of the ongoing conversation that we can have, but appreciate that you are working to educate people about the importance of this training. Thanks.
Thank you.
Ms. McDonald. All right. Representative Bakeberg, close out your bill.
Yeah. Thank you, members, for a good discussion. I want to thank Crystal and Brendan for turning just a horrific situation into something that is positive. And, you know, she's here testifying and taking time. The McNallys are tireless advocates for kids. And just thank them for that. And with that, I would invite you, Crystal won't do that, so I would invite you to April 11th. There is a Never Shake Minnesota event if you are interested in attending as well. So yes. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you, Representative. I will renew my motion that House File 4384 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
We're in the middle of a roll call, so.
I'm going to say no and potentially request a division if that's an issue. I thought this was going to wait.
But I just got to finish the
vote.
We'll
yep.
Say the motion does not prevail. Chair Cattis-Watoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had understood that this was being referred to Ways and Means. Maybe that was just my misunderstanding.
Well, the original motion was to the General Register. I loathe the department to invent their fantasy costs, considering the training already exists, more people using the training actually costing money. But if that is helpful, I think we always can find a way to move it forward so we can send it to Ways and Means.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. That was probably just my confusion, but I appreciate that motion change.
I will move House File 4384 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is now. The bill is adopted and moving on to Ways and Means. We will move House File 3750. Representative Torkelson, we already took some input on this bill, so Representative Torkelson, if you have any update in your conversations, and if there is any quick member discussion, we can do that before we move this bill to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
There is an amendment, Mr. Chair, that we would like to, the A1, we would like to add to the bill to put in the shape we would like.
I will move the A1 amendment before the committee. Representative Torkelson, please introduce the amendment.
The A1 just makes minor date changes in the bill.
Very controversial. Any discussion on the A1? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Chair Torkelson, to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill creates a new license for crisis care centers. I have a testifier who can explain it, the need, better than I can. So if you would indulge a brief testimony. I know you have a busy agenda, but I know my testifier will be brief.
All right. Please introduce yourself for the record and be brief.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. Mr. Chair, my name is Steve Turbull. I'm a volunteer board member at the Abbey House Crisis Nursery. I won't, as he said, I will be keep this brief as we were here just a couple weeks ago and I met with a few of you personally. We have continued to talk to folks from throughout the state and continue to see the need for this type of service in different corners of the state. So we appreciate the opportunity to see this bill move forward to Ways and Means, and we are continuing to work with the department to make sure it's crafted in a way that it'll benefit Minnesotans throughout the state.
Any discussion? Chair Cattis-Watoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Torkelson, have you been able to meet with the department yet? I mean, I know that you're obviously Chair of Ways and Means and that Chair West and I both serve on Ways and Means, so we can kind of continue the conversation as it moves forward. I also just want to make sure that the department is being a good partner as we consider a new license. So curious
Thank you,
on how that's going.
Representative Torkelson.
I have not personally spoken with the department, but the author or the proponents of the bill have. We believe there's an amendment coming, hasn't been prepared yet. We also don't have a fiscal note yet, but I believe the Ways and Means Chair will demand these things be in proper order.
Chair Cattis-Watoon.
Thank you. And I have no doubt that if anyone can find the finances to make this move forward, it is you, Mr. Chair. So appreciate you carrying this bill and bringing it forward for our consideration. I would support a move to Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Representative Torkelson, any last words?
No last words, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I will renew my motion that House File 3750, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 3750 is on
Thank you to the chairs.
Thank you.
All right, we'll move on to House File 4316, Representative Olson. We've also heard this bill. There is an amendment that you can move that narrows the bill to a few subjects.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment will make peace in the valley. From my understanding, we had this bill heard a couple of committee meetings ago. There were some issues that people took issue with, and there were issues that no one took issue with, and the ones that no one took issue with are what we're going to be doing today, and it appears to me as though it's about the bare minimum that we can do to actually say we did something. So I'd appreciate a yes vote on this amendment.
Any member, well, I will move the DE1 amendment to House File 4316. Any member discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted and the motion prevails. To the bill, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is about it. It requires posting of a poster in these facilities, and it also allows individual facilities to self-identify that they, in fact, found the fault, which I think is a really great thing to increase trust in one's child care facility. So that is the entirety of it, Mr. Chair.
All right, Representative Hicks.
Thank you. Thank you for this. I do just want to say that I see some opportunity in some of the stuff you removed, that we should keep working on it, particularly around when maltreatment isn't found, but there is a piece there. I've shared before that in the human services space, we have a mechanism for something similar. Looks a little bit different, but the spirit is the same, and I'd really love to continue to work on how to get that here. Just, this is my formal offer to do so.
Representative Olson.
I would say offer accepted. Let's chat about how to make this even better in the future. Make a new bill. Let's get this one passed, and then we'll work on the next thing.
All right. Representative Olson.
That's all I have, Mr. Chair. I would renew my motion to send this to the General Register.
We're sending it to Ways and
Means. Oh, there's no cost to this.
Yes. So you renew your motion to send it to Ways and Means as amended. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay. Send it to the General Register.
The motion prevails, and the House File 4316 is on its way to Ways and Means. So we will move right along. Keep them up. All right, we will move right along with Representative Olson, take two. You may move your bill and introduce it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 3603. I've got an author's amendment that I'd appreciate adopted that would add some clarification from some of the interest groups that I had chatted with.
Representative Molson moves the A1 amendment. Any member discussion? Seeing no member discussion, all those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Then the bill is now in the shape you would wish it.
Perfect.
Please introduce your bill, Representative Molson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3603 is a bill that would direct the Commissioner of Children, Youth, and Families to ask the United States Department of Agriculture for a waiver, which would allow us to essentially exempt any form of taxed food item from the state of Minnesota's SNAP benefits. So if you are a recipient of SNAP benefits and we ask for this waiver and it's accepted by the United States Department of Agriculture, then individuals utilizing their little EBT card would not be able to use that fund or those taxpayer dollars to purchase anything that is utilizing tax the taxed items, the taxed food items. That would include things like prepared food, which they already can't do, and it would include things like chips. It would include things like some soft drinks or candies. You know, the concept of this is that we have a benefit program that is to help individuals with their nutrition, help them with their sustenance. We are hoping to ensure that people have a safety net. With this, we're not hoping for them to have a sweet treat. That's kind of the idea behind it. In an effort to make Minnesotans more healthy, the concept of this would follow many other states. There are currently 22 states in the country that have an active waiver, and a couple of them that are currently asking for them. One of them that is asking for them is the state of Wisconsin. The state of Iowa currently has one, the state of North Dakota currently has one, and the South Dakota House of Representatives just passed a bill that would ask for one as well. So this is by far not something out of the ordinary. This is something that is happening currently. And on top of that, if the state of Minnesota were to accept this bill and ask for this waiver, and should this waiver be accepted, it would unlock some significant rural health care funding that the federal government has passed last year in one of their bills that they passed last year. About $12 billion is accessible by the state or by states that opt into a program of health benefits such as this. So this would give Minnesota a part of that $12 billion for rural health care, while at the same time encouraging Minnesotans to continue down the path of good nutrition and preventing Minnesota taxpayer dollars from being utilized on things like junk food, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Olson. We will now move to testimony from the public. First on the list is Don Patrick Garofalo. Did you sign up like that?
No, I did not sign up like that.
Yeah, you totally signed up like that. Please introduce yourself for the record and...
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I did not sign up to testify with that name. That was added by the chair and his staff. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Garofalo. I am president of the Minnesota Grocers Association. The Minnesota Grocers Association has been in existence for over 125 years and Minnesota's largest food advocacy organization advocating for farm table to fork. Before I get into my testimony, if I could just take a minute, Mr. Chairman, you know, when I was here in this body, first of all, it's good to see everybody again. It really is on both sides of the aisle. This is my first time testifying since I departed this place. So when I was here, when you had a bill to bring to the legislature, the first time you were in the committee hearing, you were obligated to bring members treats. And so this, since this is my first time testifying as a post member, I have brought treats for the members of the committee. In this handsome reusable Minnesota Grocers Association reusable bag. So there's lots of treats in here. I did take special note that co-chair Katiza Watoon that she wanted cinnamon sugar donut holes. So those are for you right here. We also have some Nestle Crunch bars, other treats. See, you show up with your testimony and I bring treats. I wonder who's going to win this vote. Just Kit Kats, Keeblers, all these items. And so at the appropriate time, Mr. Chairman, we'll disperse the treats. I have consulted with the Campaign Finance Board, and this is not a violation of any ethical or... Representative, if you want to go ahead and pass those around. Thank you. Yes. thank you again, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee for allowing me to testify. First of all, the Minnesota Grocers Association is opposed to this bill. We do want to offer a couple of thoughts on things here. First of all, I recognize that in the optics of public opinion and public appearances, one of these things that sounds like a good idea, but in practicality, when you drill into the specifics of it, it is not. First of all, it's important to remember that when people are using the SNAP program, it's important to focus on the S in SNAP, that is supplemental, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. The vast majority of those who are using the SNAP program actually use split tender. They show up, they use SNAP benefits, then they also will use cash, debit card, credit card for the other sides of those transactions. This is very common when you consider the fact that people are buying things like toilet paper, deodorant, personal hygiene products, none of which are covered by SNAP, but are still purchased in many stores across the state. The National Grocers Association, as well as the Food Management Institute, estimates that roughly 60% of all transactions that are used with SNAP are split tender. So regardless of the reasons for the advocacy for this bill, again, 60% will have no effect because they are split tender. Second of all is that there are unintended consequences. We do appreciate that the author of the bill has amended it to streamline it and, from our perspective, make things less bad. But there are unintended side effects of this bill as it's been amended. First of all, you'll notice that in front of me I have this here, this Kit Kat, a very tasty product. that you would assume would be unavailable for purchase under the bill as it was amended. Actually, the answer to that is that no. Kit Kats would still be considered eligible for purchase under this because under the Minnesota State Tax Code, this is not candy. A Kit Kat is not candy because it has wheat in it. So you would still be able to buy some forms of what we traditionally form as we view as candy. Second of all, it's important to understand that the tax code was not designed for nutrition. It was designed for taxability, and there are unintended side effects of that. The definition of prepared foods at the federal level for SNAP benefits is a different definition than the prepared foods definition that is used in the state of Minnesota. So, for example, if you were to go out and buy a cup of fruit with a spoon attached to it, that is currently permitted under SNAP guidelines and rules. However, under Minnesota law, that cup of fruit with a spoon attached to it is defined as a prepared food and is subject to taxation. So at the same time we would be allowing for Kit Kats to be purchased through SNAP, we would not be allowing for the purchase of healthy fruits because there's a spoon attached to it. Third and finally is I want to bring up something in adjacency that people can be aware of, and that is sales tax audits. Right now, your grocery stores, your independent grocery stores, generally have sales tax audits that are about every 3 years. And what happens is during that time, UPC symbols change, ingredients change. Department auditors from the Department of Revenue will have different opinions on the same products. Our members get dinged for that, and they end up paying back taxes on those sales taxes. We are not able to collect those from customers, but that's okay. That's just sort of the price of doing business. Understand that violating the provisions in SNAP is much more punitive. This is not something that would simply be a financial penalty in paying back sales tax provisions on a small number of items. The consequences for this are actually pretty dramatic for retailers. The first offense for violating SNAP guidelines from a retailer perspective is a six-month disqualification from SNAP benefits. And so under the rule, as the law is being proposed right now, this would allow for somebody who accidentally, let's say, sells a Milky Way because, you know, a Kit Kat would be allowed, but a Milky Way would not be allowed. Someone accidentally sells a Milky Way under the SNAP benefits, they would face a SNAP withdrawal retail of 6 months. And so for those and other reasons why we like the author and think he's a good guy, we think the underlying bill is flawed and would ask for members of the committee to oppose it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you. We'll move on to Will Hagan.
Mr. Chairman, am I not sitting for questions or hazing for members of the committee, or does that come later?
Well, any member questions for the miscreant? Three. Representative Hicks.
Okay, so I actually am a weirdo and went and read the statute the same. And so I brought some snacks. And I would like you to tell me whether they would be available under this bill as it's currently written. Fruit snacks.
Representative, Mr. Garofalo.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hicks, it would depend. It depends upon the ingredients. And again, I want to make sure I'm being clear with the committee. There are a team of people whose entire job it is just to define what food is taxable at the state of Minnesota. So I would say it depends upon the ingredients.
Well, I have the candy statue.
Representative Hicks.
Oh, sorry. I have the candy statue, and I think that this would be excluded. Or it would be included because it has sugar in it but no wheat, so I think maybe I'm not sure. Okay, Oreos.
Mr. Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hicks, I believe that would be allowed because I believe there is wheat in Oreos.
Here's where it gets really fun. Ready?
Representative Hicks, please condense yours.
All right.
This is a little like all right.
These all would not be allowed, even though they are protein bars, almond butter, crackers, and Rice Krispie treats, which I suppose we could probably decide whether that's junk food. But my point in bringing the snacks was exactly what you said. The definitions that are used for candy are complicated, and I think asking folks who are really just trying to feed their families to figure out which of the snacks their children requested for lunch is approved or not approved seems like we need a whole team of people to do it at the state. So maybe we shouldn't ask the single mom try to figure it out.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would say that we already have a team of individuals who are identifying what taxable items are. That's why we're making it, that's why the amendment was adopted in this way, because as Don Patrick Garofalo stated so eloquently, he said that it's really difficult to ask a grocery store to identify what a candy is and what a pop is and what a soft drink is or what a energy drink is, but it's really easy when you just have the data already imprinted into the computer that you've already obtained because it's a taxed item. And I would argue very vehemently that a Rice Krispie treat is in no way, shape, or form a good snack for your child to eat. So I don't think that there should be an issue with exempting that from your SNAP benefits, while at the same time remembering that these are taxpayer dollars that are buying you food. And I'm okay with the concept of someone else using their own dollars to buy Keebler fudge strips with a wonderful nutritional fact on the back. I'm okay with them buying this with their own money. I'm also okay with my taxpayer dollars going to buy lettuce and a salad kit and wheat bread for someone in need. I'm really okay with that. I am totally fine with my tax dollars going to purchase someone in need some meat, some ground beef. You know, I'm really okay with that. I'm not okay with taxpayer dollars buying Hershey's milk chocolate snack size. And you know what? If someone can get their Twizzlers for free off of SNAP benefits because they do, in fact, have wheat on them, I guess I'm going to have to be okay with that. But I also don't have to be okay with donut holes. I think that I think we owe it to the taxpayers to understand that this is a good thing. SNAP benefits is a good thing that helps a lot of people. But Doritos don't really help people. They taste great. I love them. I love them. But they don't help people. So I think that's the concept of this whole operation that we have here. Should taxpayers, should someone who's not utilizing these benefits, should a person who is graciously and generously giving their money to the state of Minnesota, should they expect that money to buy candy for another person, or should they expect that money to be wisely utilized to buy them a head of lettuce? I think that's the real question. Maybe an apple, because I'm happy for my tax dollar to go to buying an apple for a kid who needs it. I'm not okay with my tax dollar going to buying popsicles for a child.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, actually, I was just going to mention to the testifier, Mr. Garofalo, that I prefer a donut hole than the Milky Way, but that's another topic. Question for Representative Olson. Garofalo or Mr. Garofalo testified about prepared foods, but your bill doesn't say anything about prepared foods. Now, I know that's a federal USDA requirement, what is prepared food and what is not, and what is allowed and what is not. But your bill doesn't really address any of that prepared foods that was testified by Don Patrick Garofalo, correct?
Representative McDonald, this is for hazing Mr. Garofalo, not for bill questions. So. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to answer the question, the prepared food would be an item that is taxed by the state of Minnesota, so it would be excluded under the waiver.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. That was not hazing. That was a legitimate question. Thank you, Representative Olson, for seeing the legitimacy of my question.
Representative Sensimura.
I have a real question, not a hazing.
Okay, well,
it's now
we'll
time for that.
Representative Perez Vega, can we get to the other testifiers, or do you?
I'll go on.
All right.
Do you want to pass these around?
Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Don Garofalo.
Don't just stop that. Is that your
new name now? But, you know, I just have to say this. SNAP recipients are taxpayers, one, on the record. And two, as a type 1 diabetic who meets with several parents and children in different areas of the state on nutrition and what's accessible, you know, there's not a promising of what the grocery stores from a bodega all the way to rural Minnesota outside of our reservations of what is considered to be healthy food and families that want access to that. But in particularly, like, if one of those kids, and I've been there before, has a sugar low, you're not looking at excess of nutrition. Like, you're looking at, yeah, access of getting your sugars up. And sometimes, I'll tell you, not sometimes, those Sour Patch Kids are going to be more life-saving, okay, or maybe the only thing that's there, then getting access to natural orange juice It's about accessibility on it. And so I think about those parents, because many of those parents are struggling to even get affordable insulin a couple of years. Now it's accessibility, affordable food in general, even healthy food. So you got to have a check and balance here. And you also have to consider that not in each individual are the same when it comes to this. Like, hey, if I don't have enough money, I put myself, if I don't have enough money, I do, I'm fortunate to have a job, we're all in this together, but there's families that don't, and they pay tax dollars. They're not thinking about at the time of a sugar low, which is deadly if you don't have sugar at a matter of time, whether it's this, that, juice, 100% organic. They're thinking about what is accessible at that moment, and we have to play a really large role in advocating for those families that deal with these chronic illnesses. You don't know unless you know. And if you don't know, now you know.
Thank you, Mr. We'll Chair. Now move to public testimony. Will Hagen. And then we also have Matthew Schmidt on the list, if you just want to take a seat so we can catch up on some time here. Mr. Hagen.
I don't have snacks, and I don't have a fun nickname, so I apologize in advance for that. Chair West, Chair Katizawatun, and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Will Hagen with Minnesota Retailers. We represent retailers of all sizes across the state, and I'm here to express our concerns with HF 3603. As amended, the bill directs the state to seek a federal waiver to permit SNAP purchases of prepared food, soft drinks, and candy. From a retail perspective, this approach creates real operational challenges. First, this is extremely difficult to implement at the store level. Retailers already operate within complex tax and eligibility frameworks. Adding a new category of restricted items without clear, concise definitions means significant system changes. Point-of-sale systems would need to be reprogrammed, staff retrained, and stores would need to manage ongoing compliance and customer confusion. For many small retailers, especially in rural and underserved areas, these are not minor adjustments. They're real costs layered on top of existing requirements. Second, the bill effectively turns frontline retail employees into enforcers. Retail employees would be put in a position of telling customers what they can and cannot buy. That creates friction at the checkout, increases the likelihood of conflict, and places an unfair burden on store staff. Third, this creates competitive and cross-border issues. SNAP is a federal program used nationwide. If Minnesota adopts restrictions that differ from neighboring states, consumers near the border will face a patchwork of rules depending on where they shop. If a neighboring state allows a product that's prohibited in Minnesota, that shifts sales out of Minnesota and disadvantages in-state retailers without changing underlying purchasing behavior. Retailers want to be part of the solutions that work, whether that's improving access to healthy food, supporting education, or strengthening program integrity. But this approach adds complexity, increases costs, and creates confusion. We would encourage the committee to take a step back and consider approaches that are workable at the point of sale and aligned with how the program operates nationwide. Thank you.
Thank you. Matthew Schmidt, please introduce yourself for the record.
All right, good afternoon. Chairman West, Co-Chair Katizawatun, members of the committee. My name is Matt Schmidt. I'm with the America First Policy Institute, and I am head of the Farmers First campaign. In that role, I work to advance policies that not only help America's farmers and ranchers, but that promote health through increased consumption of American-grown and raised whole foods rather than ultra-processed foods. Ensuring access to healthy nutrition is also a goal the American people support. The previous testifier focused on the S. I want to focus on the N today, the nutrition piece. The stated goal of the SNAP program is to supplement grocery budgets so that low-income Americans can afford, quote, the nutritious food essential to health and well-being, and that's from the program statute. Yet the list of items eligible for SNAP in Minnesota includes junk food, beverages like candy, soda, and other foods that, when overconsumed, are known to contribute to chronic health issues. Federal and state dollars are then spent on treating those chronic health conditions, the vicious circle. Roughly 60% of voters in recent polling are in favor of state action to ban purchases of unhealthy foods with SNAP benefits. This is because in reality, SNAP ends up being a taxpayer subsidy to the junk food and soda manufacturers. This policy reform being discussed here, and I will say I'm testifying as introduced mainly because I have not had a chance to dig into the amendments, but the reform being discussed here is to stop an insidious form of corporate welfare. And it's undermining the health of our most vulnerable, forcing our teachers to manage overactive children who are often fueled by sugar, and which we then collectively pay for on the back end through our public health care spending. This committee has a chance today to advance a policy that will redirect our tax dollars
toward the nutrition that SNAP intended, away from corporate subsidies, and helping out Minnesota farmers. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public here who would like to testify on House File 3603? Seeing none, I'll close public testimony and move on to member discussion. Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you, Mr.
Sorry, I meant, do we need to do the amendment first, I believe? Sorry about that, Vice Chair Hansen, and sorry again for keeping moving on. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to move the H2 amendment, please. And this amendment really kind of echoes a lot of the values that Representative Olson has expressed here today. You know, taxpayers graciously give us their money in taxes and expect us to govern, not indulge in sweet treats. And I'm sure that those of you and out there who may share this nanny government perspective really expect us to make healthy choices that keep our jawlines and midlines appeasing to the general public. Maybe our skin glowing, right? Our hair shining. Keep us looking good for people who just want to consume us as they look at us, right? Because that's what this is really about when we talk about trying to control what people eat. And so my amendment here would try to align us. If we're going to ask people who are taking, on SNAP to restrict what they eat, and I'll go into more of this in my next comments, but we should hold ourselves to the same level. I went and bought this soda right before I came here, just, you know, with my per diem money. And if we're expecting people, the poorest people who need help eating, we should hold ourselves to that same standard. So I believe in parity and equity across that sort of thing. And so what's good for the goose better be good for the gander. And I hope that we can vote yes on this amendment today. Thanks.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question to the amendment author would be, how did she know that she utilized her per diem to purchase that pop instead of her actual income? Because the way that I see it is that comes together in the same check. But with that being said, I would also claim that the purpose of per diem is to the purchasing of prepared items when you live far enough away from your home that you can't drive home. So you and I live in a very different scenario where you can drive home every single day to your kitchen where you can prepare your food. I live 2 hours away from my kitchen. And so per diem, the actual purpose of per diem is to assist individuals who don't get to go home every night to purchase food. And a lot of our members actually live while they're here in hotel rooms and small little apartment buildings. And so when they do that, you're asking some of our members to use like a hot pot and a little steam jug, make my hot water so I can make my ramen noodles. That's what you're asking with this amendment. But also you're asking it in a way that is totally unenforceable and impossible to do. So I would see this amendment as an unrealistic, unreasonable advocacy of just making a statement and not an actual serious piece of legislation. So I would ask members to not accept this.
Further discussion on the amendment. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. Regardless of where you're living, salads are available. There's grocery stores around hotels and apartment buildings. I'm just using your logic. I'm applying the same logic you've presented here today. And while I may get to go home every day because I only live a half an hour away, I'm also a single parent. So when I get home, I have to do the job of two adults. I have to raise and budget my money. So I know that came from my per diem because I have a budget. So, you may have 2 hours to drive home. I have 2 extra hours of doing laundry because there's nobody to flip it for me. I have 2 extra hours of balancing my budget and making sure I've got that. So, you know, it's a different, maybe different battles, but they are similar struggles, right? As much as you may want to be home with your family faster in 2 hours, I would like to be, you know, maybe doing some embroidery, but instead I'm doing all the cooking, all the cleaning, all the everything because I raised my child alone. And so if you're open to an amendment that say that this would only apply to folks with, you know, 2 adults in the household, I'm open to an oral amendment for that. I'm open to, you know, the other way if you'd like to say that those of us who have these lives where we're making up for the jobs of 2 adults in our households, I'd be open to that as well. But I'm applying your logic right back to you, and I'll have more comments at the end of this, too.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. So without further ado, all those in favor of the A2 amendment say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Nay.
No. The amendment does not prevail. The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Member discussion to the bill. Representative Sensomura.
Fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just wanted to follow up on something that you talked about in your opening, Representative Olson. Can you explain a little bit more? I'm not familiar with. You talked about if states get a waiver to do this kind of limitations on SNAP, then it unlocks some potential funding for rural health care from the federal government. Can you explain more about what that is?
Representative Olson.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So this is on PBS.org. It says the Trump administration rolls out rural health funding, and it says with strings attached. So it talks about here, let me read it down. The formula also ties $12 billion of the five-year funding to whether states are implementing health policies prioritized by the Trump administration's Make America Healthy Again initiative, including asking the use of SNAP benefits, banning the use of SNAP benefits for so-called junk foods. So there are currently 22 states in the union that have that waiver. They will qualify for this money. And $12 billion for rural health care sounds like a lot of money to me. They're claiming that it's going to equal, when it's all said and done, they're thinking about $200 million per state. $200 million per state in federal funds if we accept something like this today. If we don't, we will leave $200 million worth of federal funds on the table for another state like Iowa, which has one, Wisconsin, which is getting one, North Dakota, which has one, and South Dakota, which is asking for one as well. When you're talking about different border states, this amendment that we accepted, this bill now almost identically looks like the state of Iowa's. So currently, yeah, there is a difference between SNAP benefits between the state of Minnesota and the state of Iowa. The hope would be is that we could streamline that to make both Minnesota and Iowa eligible to receive these federal funds.
Representative Sensomura. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Olson, I know we're just getting to know each other, but with all due respect and thoughtfulness, when I see this, I really feel that you're putting a squeeze on poor people, on the folks who are like really the most vulnerable. Do you realize that, I assume?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I would not see this as putting a squeeze on an individual. I would say that this is an idea of taking taxpayer dollars, something that in this state of Minnesota, we currently have wildly thrown out the concept of any form of consistency or respect for the taxpayer dollar, and utilizing that. Now remember, we had a testifier state that 60% of purchases are split purchases using SNAP benefits. I'm okay with 61% being split if that means that Minnesota is finally going to be accountable for the taxpayer dollar in at least one more area, because this state is one of the least accountable states when it comes to taxpayer dollars. And I think we can talk about that all day long with the utilization of all the massive amounts of fraud that we have in this state. So you want to talk about making Minnesota healthier again? How about we make our state healthy? How about we help make our people healthy? And how about we just have some form of reliability when it comes to the efficiency and the respectfulness of the utilization of taxpayer dollars? Because, yeah, the individuals who receive this benefit, they are taxpayers too, and we should respect them at the same rate we respect every other person who contributes to the coffers of this state.
Representative Lee.
I get it. Those are your talking points. But if you really wanted to be committed to health, if you really wanted to be committed to tax dollars, you could address all of that for everyone, all Minnesotans. Instead, you bring forward this bill just focused on SNAP recipients. So that's why, for me, it's obvious you're targeting the most vulnerable people who have to be eligible. People have to be eligible because they have their income is so low in today's United States of America that they need SNAP. And now you're saying they can't even buy candy. Candy. Who's candy for? Candy is for children. right? Candy is for children. When you think of candy, you think of Easter. You think of Halloween. Parents buy candy for their children. When you think of energy drinks, who do you really think of? Youth and young adults. Red Bull, Monster, C4, Prime. Yeah, I mean, they built multi-million dollar industry targeting athletics and sports at youth and young adults. Soda, same thing. What's more American than Coca-Cola? So if you really wanted to address health and taxpayer funds, you would bring something that would address the retail stores putting all of these candy and drinks and unhealthy convenience foods at the front of registers, on the way to the registers, forcing everyone to be able to walk past and be strong enough, have enough will to avoid and not look at all of these temptations. You would address the marketing of these items to children and the ingredients. I mean, even RFK Jr. is against.
Representative Lee, if you could wrap up the comments, please.
The corn syrup, right? So I see this, again, as targeted towards the most vulnerable, lowest income population of Minnesotans. And if you really want to work on health and taxes, let's do that for everyone. And there are other ways, better ways, to be able to get that done. So I will be a no vote. Thank you.
All right. We have two people on the list, and then we will move to a vote. Representative Coulter.
Excuse me. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, you mentioned this $12 billion that we would allegedly get a slice of. Could you remind me what you mentioned that it was coming from a federal bill? Could you remind me which bill that was?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so it's actually like collectively known as the One Big Beautiful Bill. You may think differently of it and may have a different word for it, but that is what it is collectively known as.
Representative Coulter, briefly, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And indeed, I do have different words for it that are maybe not polite in this particular context. What? And I think it's interesting that you reference that bill when we're talking about SNAP. Because the reality is that because of that bill, tens of thousands of Minnesotans will lose their SNAP benefits starting next year. And I think it is just a remarkable demonstration of the priorities of the folks who are setting the agenda for today that this is what we're talking about. Representative Wilson, I have one more question for you. Do you know what the average SNAP payment per day is?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Per day or per day. Month? So I know it's about $200 a month is what they provide. And I will also mention that those tens of thousands of individuals who are going to lose their SNAP benefits are individuals between the ages of 55 and 64 years of age who have no dependents, no disabilities, and no job whatsoever. If you are an individual who is between those ages of 55 years old and 64, in my mind, if you are not disabled, you are perfectly capable of working, perfectly capable of contributing to our society, and you should. And remember, not disabled, no dependents, and no job. I think that at some point, if we're going to ask the taxpayers to provide benefits to individuals, we need to have the individuals pay a little bit back to society as well. And I think that is more than fair. So those are the people who you're talking about are going to be losing their benefits. They're not disabled people. They are not people with dependents. They are people who are not old and don't have a job and also aren't volunteering. I think it's very easy to find some time to volunteer every single week. if you really, really need the $200 worth of SNAP benefits, you can find a job and you can find the volunteering time. So that is, it's about $200 to answer your question.
I will remind members that we are discussing the bill at hand and not federal bills. That goes for both of you. Representative Coulter, closing comments.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I that's a different number than I had, but it's close enough, as my dad would say, close enough for government work. The number I had was $5 a day. We're talking about cutting off folks who get $5 a day. And Representative Olson, to your comment, those are also people who are going hungry. Whatever you may think of their life circumstances, they are people who are going hungry or will go hungry. And we know hunger is on the rise. And so I don't understand why we are making it harder for people who will be going hungry. And I have to say, it's still not frankly clear to me what candy means in this context, but to borrow Representative Lee's phrasing, I think it is incredibly ironic that we are doing this the week before Easter. Thank you.
Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I don't want to take too much of the time. I'm echoing what both of my colleagues on this side of the aisle have addressed. But, I do have to vocalize one of, like, the most amazing constituents that I've had in the honor to represent, who's my father, who's a veteran, who speaks highly about this. He doesn't use SNAP. He was drafted to war, 18 years old. He wonders why folks want to take away our gesture as Americans to feed people in need, just as much as they drafted him to war to say that we needed to protect people in need. And that they're circling around healthcare, that this is circling around you want better health, we want better health. I wish we would all come together to demand better healthcare for everybody, just as much as you're so adamant about taking away food from people who this may be the only accessibility of access to get food, maybe a bag of chips. Whether you're in the south side of Minneapolis, like my colleague right here to the left, which has amazing co-ops too, to my district right here, or greater Minnesota when we're hitting the road, because I know on my way to Alexandria, my way to Hibbing, and all those stops of those amazing places, cities, and townships, they don't have much resources to see what's other than a Snicker bar or a beef jerky stick or a packet of Skittles at times. And that child and those parents look like everybody who's in this room right now and some that don't look like in this room right now. So I would urge folks to really consider that. I can't vote for this bill because it is discrimination for me. And we should be advocating to be supportive to health care in other rooms as well than this just committee. No questions. Just I urge a no vote.
Representative Katiza Batu.
Was Representative Hanson on the list? Or no?
That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Representative Olson, I think we've had a good discussion on this proposal today, and I appreciate the testifiers who came in to shed a little bit more light on the implementation side of things and what that might look like in grocery stores. I've just been doing a little bit of research over here on the states that have already taken a step to implement some sort of restriction along these lines. And what I'm seeing, and it's not 100% correlation, but there does seem to be a large overlap in the states that have already put these restrictions on the SNAP program are some of the least healthy states in the union. And here in Minnesota, we're not, right? We're typically in the top 10 states and maybe even higher some years. And I can't help but think that there might be some connection there. And is this a step that we need to take when generally people are taking care of themselves, getting healthy food, outdoor activity, bikes, gym, all of that sort of stuff. And I think that something that is worthwhile to think about and to discuss before we go ahead and restrict, again, some of the lowest income folks in the state on what they can buy. It's easy, I think, to look at people who need a hand up
and say all of our challenges are because of them. They're taking advantage of our, how did you put it, graciously and generously given tax dollars when they also pay taxes. And it's easy to turn them into the boogeyman instead of asking corporations to pay their fair share or asking millionaires and billionaires to pay their fair share so that the people who need the help the most can put food on the table for their children. And that's a choice, right? And we may look at that from different angles. But at this point, I can't support this, and I would recommend a no vote for my members. And, Mr. Chair, I would request a roll call.
Representative Bowles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. An overwhelming majority of Minnesotans and Americans believe that their taxpayer dollars should be utilized respectfully, responsibly, and in a way that is most efficient for their government to function. This is just one of those ways in which we can be accountable to the taxpayer. To promise them that the money that they are graciously giving to the coffers of this state can be utilized in a way that can help other people. We are all right with the concept of helping those in need, but we want that to go in a way that benefits everyone. This bill will allow us that opportunity to benefit the individuals who are utilizing these benefits as well as to unlock substantial federal funding for our rural health care systems. I would ask that we pass this on and continue moving in the right direction for us as a state, but also for the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I will renew my motion that House File 3603 be re-referred.
Mr. Chair, I just want to mention that I really wanted to speak on this, and like as one of the only like
Representative Hansen,
I just wanted to mention like
we
it
said
is,
two more. We just got to keep moving.
I mentioned it in my amendment comments that I had additional comments to make, and so I just wanted to make sure that that was on the record. I think there's a lot of people who asked me to say some things today, and so I just wanted to recognize that. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry about that. Renew my motion to re-refer House File 3603 as amended to the General Register. A roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Katiza Watoon?
No.
Hansen?
Absolutely not.
Nelson?
Aye.
Altendorf?
Yes.
Coulter?
Nope.
Hicks?
Nope.
Lee?
No.
McDonald?
Nadeau? Yes.
Olson?
Yes.
Perez Vega?
Nah. No.
Sensor Mura?
No.
Zalesnikar? Yes.
There being seven ayes and seven nays, the motion does not prevail, and the bill does not advance. I will lay over House File 3603 as amended. Moving on, House File 3831, Representative Altendorf.
Mr. Chair and members, I move House File 3831 and refer it to Ways and Means.
And please proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Thank you, members. Today I am presenting House File 3831, and this bill is about good governance. This is a bill with hopefully to help solve a problem that is coming up down the road. We have right now in Minnesota an error rate of 9%, and starting in 2027, right now Minnesota is all federally, our SNAP is federal paid dollars. It's $850 million. In 2027, if we do not lower our error rate below 6%, just to give an example, we would be responsible for approximately $86 million of that. And we have the ability to keep it so it is 100% federally funded. This is a choice, and I hope we can work together to find ways to do that. This SNAP bill, and I do have some testifiers that I'll have next, but basically what it's doing is it's moving the eligibility up front. And that is all this bill does. It's not cutting anyone off of eligibility. It's not making it more difficult for people. It's just helping to reduce the error rate that is happening. So instead of it happening typically at a six-month review and then finding that some people were not eligible for SNAP, we're moving it up to the front. And with that, Mr. Chair, I do have some testifiers.
All right. Mr. Rob Undersander. And if Matthew Schmidt also wants to come up front to keep it moving. Mr. Undersander, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Rob Undersander. From Way Park, Minnesota, I was invited to testify today because 10 years ago, I went public as a millionaire receiving food stamps legally. My wife and I received nearly $6,000 of SNAP benefits over a 19-month period ending in January of 2018. Why did we do this? To raise public awareness and work to eliminate a case of fraud by design. I want to be clear that we donated an equivalent amount to my church, charities, one individual, and did not profit from SNAP. I testified here nearly 8 years ago for a bill sponsored by then Representative Jeff Howe. That bill failed to gain support from the legislature. My wife and I received these benefits as a wealthy couple because eligibility in Minnesota is based on income only, not assets. Eliminating broad-based categorical eligibility would close that loophole and help to lower the state's SNAP error rate below 6%. In addition to raising public awareness, my goal was to personally audit SNAP. I learned a lot more by participating, not just researching. In an effort to save time this hearing, I'll mention just four things that I learned. One, our expensive house with its high mortgage payment, taxes, and insurance qualifies us for a higher benefit because benefits are based on net income. We received up to $341 per month. This was 10 years ago. I had personally talked to several seniors in the St. Cloud area who were struggling financially and were only receiving the minimum $15 a month. Asset testing with excess value determination would have prevented that disparity. Secondly, prior to applying for SNAP benefits, I set up a generous automatic IRA monthly withdrawal and reported that as income, which is taxable. My Stearns County caseworker correctly did not count that income. I believe that any taxable income should be counted. I was 63 years old when I applied for SNAP benefits and could have applied for Social Security benefits, albeit at a reduced amount. Those benefits would have made me ineligible based on income. Now I get a larger Social Security benefit with delayed retirement credits, in addition to the nearly $6,000 from SNAP. SNAP benefit calculations should reflect eligible Social Security benefits. Finally, probably spent enough time on this subject. I was going to say non-nutritious and luxury food items such as soft drinks, energy drinks, candy snacks, desserts, and so on should be disallowed. I have purchased lobster and filet mignon on my EBT card. I want to be clear that, like Representative Altendorf, I strongly support SNAP benefits for truly needy individuals, but when we have nearly 1 in 7 Americans receiving food stamps in the wealthiest nation on earth with historically low unemployment rates, something is wrong. So I previously mentioned one might call the current eligibility rules fraud by design. Given the current climate of fraud and abuse of taxpayer-funded benefits in Minnesota, I'm hoping that there will now be a new bipartisan effort to reduce and eliminate both. Please vote for HF 1900. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have at this point.
Thank you for your testimony. Matthew Schmidt, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, good afternoon, Chair West, Co-Chair Katiza Watun, members of the committee. As I stated earlier, my name is Matthew Schmidt. I am with the America First Policy Institute as the Farmers First campaign director. Americans are a generous people. We established the SNAP program to act as a safety net for the most vulnerable. As Representative Altendorf mentioned, the program is 100% federally funded, yet in Minnesota and elsewhere, SNAP is managed by the counties. The SNAP payment error rate in Minnesota, which is a measure of good program administration, was almost 9% in 2024. Due to new federal law, this high error rate is going to result in almost $87 million in new state spending next year to cover a share of recipient benefits. According to the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, who's the federal government's auditor, a main contributor to payment errors is a loophole known as this broad-based categorical eligibility, or BBCE. It allows states to confer SNAP eligibility even when folks do not meet federal eligibility requirements. And the fundamental issue here is that BBC in Minnesota confers eligibility, as Mr. Understander stated, without asset testing and prior to income testing. And so eligibility is determined by receipt of a brochure here in Minnesota, not based off of a cash benefit. This means that hard data about finances is not always verified up front, contributing to errors later when the United States Department of Agriculture conducts audits. The math done up front versus the math when they're doing it does not match, and that's what leads to these errors. In states that have adopted BBCE, there's a 34% higher rate of payment errors than in states that have not adopted BBCE. According to the GAO, this is largely due to income-based calculations, while fewer than 4% of errors are caused by asset calculations. The GAO also found that removal of asset testing reduced caseworker ability to investigate and identify inconsistencies and possible fraud. So closing the BBCE loophole, I believe, is a good governance measure. It will give county caseworkers the tools that they need to verify resources and income up front, avoid errors, and ensure folks are qualifying and really streamlining the process. The reform will go a long way to restoring public trust and integrity. And prior to 2007, these guardrails existed. Minnesota collected asset information prior to 2007, and it should bring them back. We have polling that shows that 80% of voters agree. I also want to note that the reforms do not change the income limits for SNAP beneficiaries. So instead, what it does is it moves the point in time when verification takes place so that net income is verified up front, both for eligibility purposes as well as for benefit allocation purposes. So again, you're streamlining the process. This reform is about eliminating a main source of the math errors and not kicking people off of SNAP. Closing the loophole will not also impose a benefits cliff. We're still maintaining a 200% broad net. Folks can qualify. You back out utilities, rent, et cetera, and folks can still qualify. In addition, reintroducing asset testing will have a limited impact for folks who actually need it, because the proposed asset threshold in this bill is significantly higher and more generous than the federal asset limit. It's using the same state asset limit used for the Minnesota Family Investment Program and General Assistance. And once again, that's another efficiency to this reform. Assets don't apply to homes, primary vehicles, other exceptions, or to participants who qualify for other assistance such as childcare. As to the impact to counties, I would reiterate that counties used to do asset testing prior to 2007 with much smaller county budgets. For example, I looked at Hennepin County's budget. It's more than doubled since 2006 when asset testing was required. The county managed to asset test back then when their budget was 50% lower. And furthermore, this is always often billed as a efficiency that, you know, we need less people to manage the program if we introduce BBCE. Well, county budgets, state budgets never get reduced. You introduce the policy and the budgets stay the same. And so the resources theoretically should still be there. And finally, most critically, the administrative efficiency of categorical eligibility for SNAP remains intact and tied to eligibility for cash assistance. So what this bill is saying is, let's actually tie it to cash assistance and not non-cash assistance, the brochure that currently qualifies folks. As I stated earlier, it would use the same asset thresholds as general assistance and MFIP, which do require asset testing, so it's just bringing the program into alignment with pre-existing programs. Person who's eligible under those programs can still be categorically eligible for SNAP, maintaining
Please,
administrative
wrap
efficiency.
Wrap up your testimony, if you could.
All right. In conclusion, the proposed reforms aren't dramatic, but they are important, and will return Minnesota to an era of previous good governance where the public could trust American generosity was zealously safeguarded by the folks sitting in this room. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list, we have Callie Proctor. So if someone could make space for her. We also have Jessica Webster. Ms. Proctor, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, committee members. Thank you for hearing me today. My name is Callie Proctor, and I have worked in social services in the state of Minnesota for most of my adult life, working with our community's most marginalized members in some capacity or another. And I've spent a lot of time assisting individuals in applying for SNAP and working on benefits cases for a lot of years. So I just want to start by saying that I believe these programs matter, particularly when it comes to food access. I've worked with many people who rely on SNAP, and access to food is not something that we should take lightly. Members of my own family utilize this benefit, so I do care what happens with it. It's also important for you to know that I don't blindly support policy changes. I've asked a lot of questions, I've sought to understand the proposal, and I would definitely not support anything that I believed would harm the communities and the people that I've been called to serve, and certainly wouldn't support a gutting of the SNAP program. So in Minnesota's current model, verification is required, but it's not always completed before benefits are issued. And I understand there are reasons for this. But in practice, it leads to a lot of inconsistencies across counties and even between workers. So when the standards are applied unevenly, it creates confusion, it contributes to errors like those that have been discussed, and it can ultimately reduce confidence in the system. I don't believe it is unreasonable to expect income and asset verification as part of determining eligibility, and honestly, it makes me feel a lot better to know that Minnesota's asset verification is a higher limit than the federal one, because I think the federal one is too low. So clear and consistent standards matter, not only for program integrity, but for ensuring the fairness of the people the program is actually meant to serve. So at the same time, I would emphasize that any shift toward more verification or just upfront verification should be considered alongside administrative capacity. If we're asking counties to do more at the front end, then we should ensure their staffing and infrastructure to carry it out effectively. This doesn't have to be framed as compassion versus accountability. In my experience, both are very necessary for a system or a program that is fair, consistent, and sustainable. So thank you for your consideration, and I apologize for my sniffling.
No problem at all.
Thanks.
Ms. Webster, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid and the Disability Law Center. We're here opposing House File 3831, which restores the $10,000 asset limit to SNAP and would be particularly devastating for people with disabilities and seniors, and stops millions of federal dollars coming to Minnesota. I do appreciate that Representative Altendorf did meet with me. She explained what she was trying to do, and I think we actually do have some shared concerns around outdated technology and processing. And I also acknowledge to her that the working parents and families I represent rarely have $500 in liquid savings. But asset limits are a different animal for people with disabilities and for seniors who need an asset account to stretch their entire lives. Now, Mr. Chair, I very rarely offer a statutory history, but if you'd humor me on this one, this is the very first issue that I worked on as a baby lawyer 20 years ago. And the citizen who brought this issue looked very different than the millionaire Mr. Rob Undersander. The citizen that brought this was named Mike Gruey. He was a 47-year-old with an intellectual disability. He was living independently and making $250 a week as a maintenance worker. He was very sweet. He was very friendly. He was violently assaulted on his job, and he received $6,000 from the State Crime Victims Fund, which was the only money he had in the world. He very quickly got a letter from the county terminating his SNAP when he got that $6,000 award because he was over assets. Mike was popular around the Capitol. He had a successful side hustle selling granola bars and protein bars to legislators. And in a bipartisan effort to help Mike and people with disabilities have a little more savings while accessing SNAP, Democrat Linda Berglund and Republican Paul Coring brought legislation to increase the asset limit to help people like Mike and to help people with disabilities be able to be on SNAP. It was signed by Governor Tim Pawlenty. Under the bill before you today, with inflation, Mike would again be at risk of losing his SNAP. So in closing, I know we have work to do in SNAP. As the representative said, we are staring down significant and terrifying federal cost shares and penalties. We have Oregon Trail computer systems. The bill in front of you would require new paper processing of thousands of applications. And I'm sad that the counties more broadly are not here today, because I would argue that this change in 2006 was maybe the most significant paperwork reduction that we have ever done for the counties in the SNAP or MFIT programs. I humbly ask that we don't put new barriers in place for Minnesotans to access this critical federal benefit, and I really appreciate your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there any other member of the public here who wishes to testify on the bill? Seeing none, we will move to amendments. And members, please be brief. Chair Katizawatun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Altendorf, I appreciate you bringing an idea forward so that we can discuss it. And I don't fully disagree with the concept of asset limits in general, but I do think that we need to consider a much higher asset limit, partially based on the testimony of the last testifier with inflation and all these things. I mean, leading financial advisor Dave Ramsey recommends that people have like up to a 6-month emergency fund. And when you just Google the average rent payment in the state of Minnesota, it's like $1,600. So that almost puts somebody at $10,000 if they just have enough to pay their rent for the next 6 months and they lose a job. So I think, you know, we have some room to work together there. This amendment would increase the asset limit to $100,000 and require that legislators who have asset limits valuing more than $100,000 do not receive per diem. And I think that, you know, when we think about folks who are on SNAP, the average benefit is $5 to $6 a day. During session, we're receiving up to $86 a day. And if we are lucky enough to have an asset limit that is $100,000 or more, I think that we can utilize those taxpayer dollars in a more efficient manner. So I would appreciate support.
Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Chair Katizawatun. And I know, you know, we're working together. This is, you know, what she's saying with the disability and the elderly, that, you know, that there might be some circumstances. On your amendment, I do think that there's this tone of a little bit of sarcasm with bringing in the per diem and trying to make some political points. And I think that's just a little bit disappointing, because I think we could work together, and it is something that needs to be done. And it does feel a little bit like it's a mockery of, you know, raising the asset limits, but then adding in the per diem. No one, I'm just going to be very crystal clear, no one is trying to kick people off of SNAP. No one is doing that. We value it. We want the people who qualify for that to get it. We raised the limits higher than the federal level. So, like, in good conscience, I really am trying to help save the state of Minnesota millions of dollars so that we're not having a high error rate, and trying to do a better job of processing this at the front end. So with that, I would ask everyone to vote no on that amendment.
Chair Katizawatun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, I find it hard to believe that people who would vote no on this amendment think that legislators who have an asset limit of over $100,000 need an $86 per day per diem during the session. And if we want to talk about respectfully and responsibly spending the taxpayer dollars, those of us who sit in that category can make a sacrifice so that people in Minnesota can eat. So I would appreciate a yes vote.
All those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? No.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The Division being requested, all those who voted in favor, please raise your hand. All those opposed, please raise your hand. Seeing seven ayes and seven nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Lee with the A2.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Altendorf, for this. I think we all agree on the bureaucracy and the policies and the process that needs to be improved. I'm also getting to know you as well. Again, I'd ask the same question. You realize this is, again, targeted and focused on putting the squeeze in particular on SNAP benefits. And so you were incorrect earlier because you're here, Subdivision 2 identifies vehicle value, trade-in value. So that would be a very specific change in your bill. And so I guess my question is, why identify vehicle trade-in value at this level of $100,000?
Representative Altendorf.
Chair West, thank you for the question. Yeah, the limit was a $100,000 vehicle at trade-in value that we felt if someone could afford that, that probably SNAP wasn't for them. But thank you for not, character assassinating me and assuming that I don't care about people on SNAP.
Yeah.
Representative Lee.
Yeah, I'm a car enthusiast. I did, a little bit of math. I've never needed SNAP. My parents did. And so worked out, if I would have qualified for a loan for $100,000, works out to maybe $2,000 a month, which is well under federal or guidelines for SNAP. If folks have a family of three, four children as well, their benefits are around $5,000. I mean, isn't that their choice if they want to be able to go out and buy a really nice Corvette? Those are, really fast and cool. That's a lifestyle choice, right, Representative? You don't think that would be okay? Good question.
Representative Altendorf.
Chair West and Representative Lee, again, the limit is $100,000 for a car, and most people agree that that's a quite high valuable car. I know something much higher than anything anyone in my family owns. And no, I am quite fine with that someone that has a $100,000 vehicle is not eligible for SNAP. And I also believe most Minnesotans are going to actually be on my side on this. But thank you for that clip.
Well, that's again.
Representative Lee, please, final comments.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was getting to my point because my amendments then would propose that on the flip side, if someone has the money and wants to buy a $100,000 car, then there would be a 1% fee to help pull into my other proposal legislation that would create a Minnesota SNAP program, and then we could help fund that with all the sales that will be going on in Minnesota. Thank
you. Representative Lee moves the A2 amendment, which I believe was described. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Chair West, and thank you, Representative Lee. I know there's no tax that the Minnesota Democrats do not like, but this is not a tax that we're going to add on a SNAP bill that is just supposed to be about good governance and helping Minnesota save money. Because at the end of the day, if we don't pass something and we continue to play politics, what's going to happen is Minnesota is going to incur more fees, and that is less money for the people who actually need these welfare benefits, which I think is really the bigger issue that makes me sad. I want people who qualify for SNAP to get SNAP. I want people who do have a $100,000 vehicle to probably think about selling that, and then they could qualify for SNAP at a later time. That would be my suggestion would be to vote no. Thank you.
Representative Hicks, on the amendment or the bill? Because okay, we're going to wrap up the amendment vote. Can we just go to the vote? Gotten it pretty well there. All right. All those in favor of the A2 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. And with that, we are to the bill. We have two members on the list so far. We're going to take as few as possible, if you wouldn't mind, members. Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chair. And I'll be quick. First of all, I do want to say thank you for trying to fix it. We do need to fix it. Like I think the intent is to try to do something is honorable, and I appreciate it. My concerns with this are very much like your previous testifier. I've spent a lot of my life professionally watching people who suddenly get a traumatic brain injury, who suddenly have a heart attack and can't go back to work, who have a stroke, who are in a car accident, who have a significant job loss. Because of the way our system is and because of the way that we use asset limits, particularly in healthcare around disabilities, but also in cash assistance, the amount of folks that I have listened to say things like, so I have to be desperate and bankrupt and have no way to do anything and be homeless before I get any help is disturbing. And the truth of the matter is that that is what has traditionally happened in the work that I've done and in what I've seen from folks. And I know $10,000 sounds like a lot of money, and it is a lot of money to a lot of people. But if you suddenly experience a disability or a job loss before you're certified disabled, before all the protections of being a person with a disability kick in, it goes real fast. When you have to pay COBRA payments because you're not eligible for Medicaid, because you're not certified yet, right? Like, it disappears so quickly. And sometimes the only thing that saves people to getting through to when that short-term disability or that long-term disability or that Social Security application finally gets through, is food support and is SNAP. And so I am opposed to reinserting the asset limit. And so I just wanted to share why it would be a no today. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Chair West. And I just want to address that really quick. I think there is some misconception because our asset testing excludes your home value. It excludes a car under 100,000, which I would say, I mean, again, I don't know how many people are over 100,000, but it was just to put a limit. It excludes a 401k. It excludes pensions. So, no, it is not what you're saying. It is not that you have to be poor and homeless. Absolutely not. When someone is struggling, we want to be there for SNAP. We want to help them. I know people have been in that situation, and this is a good governance bill. This is to try to help reduce the error rate that's happening so that we are not fined as a state.
Representative Coulter.
Yeah, I'll be real quick. First of all, I would just be very wary of challenging Representative Hicks when it comes to issues around disability. But I want to actually hit on the point, Representative Altendorf, that you just made about reducing the payment error rate. So my understanding is that I want to say 41 states use broad-based categorical eligibility, which means that 9 do not. Do you know of those 9 states how many have a payment error rate lower than 6%?
Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Chair West. I do know that out of the states that, the states that do the BBCE, they have a 34% higher error rate. Is that correct? Maybe I need to call in my. Did I say that correct?
No, that is correct.
Okay. Yes, that is correct. Out of the states that you're referring to, that do the what we do, the BBCE. We have a 34% higher error rate than the 9% of the states who do not.
Representative Coulter.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that information, but that wasn't my question. And the answer is 3. Of the 9 states who don't use broad-based categorical eligibility, only 3 have a payment error rate lower than 6%. So, I guess if that's the purpose here, that's not what this bill accomplishes. Thank you.
Representative Altendorf.
Chair West and Representative Coulter, that was a good example of twisting statistics because, again, out of the 41 states that have BBCE, Minnesota included, we have a 34% higher error rate. So I know you took out of the nine just three, but the truth is it is a 34% higher error rate with the states that are implementing it. And again, I know we're all on the same page, but we just like to help avoid these penalties that are coming down the pipe. Is there closing?
That's your closing?
Yeah, just really, again, we are at a 9% error rate. If we do nothing in 2027, the state of Minnesota, we would be basically responsible for $86 million. But that doesn't have to be the case. We can continue to have the federal government pay for 100% of the SNAP program. I don't think Minnesotans have $100 million sitting around that we want if the federal government will pay for it. So we do need to do something. And also, I know I hear, you know, that it's cumbersome, our MACSA system is outdated. But folks, in 2013, Minnesota, we had a 4% error rate using the same system. So I believe in us. I believe we could work together to reduce our error rate. I think this is one step towards it, and I would appreciate your support.
And I will request a roll call on the bill for efficiency. The clerk will take the roll.
Katiza Watun?
No.
West?
Aye.
Hansen?
No.
Nelson?
Aye.
Altendorf?
Yes.
Coulter?
No.
Hicks?
Nope.
Lee?
No.
McDonald?
Aye.
Nadeau?
Yes.
Olson?
Yes.
Perez Vega?
No.
Sensor Mura?
No.
Zalesnikar?
Aye.
There being seven ayes and seven nays, the motion does not prevail and the bill is not sent on. And I will lay over House File 3831. All right, light speed. I'll move House File 495 in front of the committee. So House File 495 is a bill that makes daycare costs tax deductible. Because daycare is outrageously expensive, we need people to have more money because everything's getting more expensive these days. And it's absolutely insane when it costs $20,000 or more to have a child, an infant in daycare center in this country. So I will move House File 495 to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes, and I also have author's amendment that has a technical change. I'll move the A1 amendment to House File 495. Any discussion on the A1 amendment that changes the date? No, seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Who's doing the first amendment? Representative Sensenbrenner.
Thank you. I'd like to offer the A2 amendment. We are talking a lot today about affordability and making sure that the people that have more than enough pay their fair share. So this would add a fifth tier income tax to Minnesota's tax code, which is a millionaire tax. In our K-shaped economy, people that are making over $1 million definitely have enough to not get this subtraction. So please vote for the amendment if you believe that millionaires should not be able to have a subtraction for their child care costs. Thank you.
Thank you. This is an amendment for taxes, not for the Children and Families Committee, creating a new tax bracket. So I urge members not to support the amendment.
Chair, Mr. Chair, I would request a roll call.
There being roll call, the clerk will take the roll on the A2 amendment.
Katiza Watun?
Aye.
West?
No.
Hansen?
Yes.
Nelson? Altendorf?
No.
Coulter? Coulter? Hicks?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
McDonald?
No.
Nadeau?
No.
Olson?
No.
Perez Vega?
Yes.
Sensor Mura?
Yes.
Zalesnikar?
There being six ayes and six nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Coulter, do you want to move your A3 amendment, which is effectively the same amendment? Would love if you didn't.
turn on my mic.
Mr. Chair, point of order. I don't believe that it's possible to amend an amendment that just failed.
No, they're both amendments to the bill.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was an amendment. Okay. My mistake, point of order.
Representative,
I'm wrong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My apologies again. I misunderstood what we were doing next in the agenda here. So this is really a pretty simple amendment here. It just cuts off this tax credit for folks in the fourth income tier, and I don't have that number off the top of my head. I want to say it's around the $200,000 a year range. As long as we're, you know, talking about making wise use of taxpayer dollars, I think those are folks who don't necessarily need this particular tax cut.
Can I request a roll call?
Yes.
There we go. This is an amendment for tax committee. I'd urge a no vote on the amendment. The clerk will take the roll.
Katiza Watoon.
Aye.
West.
No.
Hansen.
Aye.
Nelson.
No.
Altendorf.
No.
Coulter.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Lee.
Aye.
McDonald.
No.
Nadeau.
No.
Olson.
No.
Perez Vega.
Yes.
Censor Murrah. Oh, Zalesnikar, sorry.
No. There being six ayes and seven noes, the amendment does not prevail and the motion is not adopted. All righty. We should pass this out. Very good bill. People need to have taxpayer deductible daycare costs. I'll renew my motion to re-refer House File 495 to the committee on Chair Katiza Watoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that we're running short on time today, but this is definitely a bill that deserves some consideration. You know, we are looking at multiple different ways to help Minnesotans afford childcare. And, you know, in some of the amendments that were just voted down and the amendments that have been voted down on previous bills today, I think are showing a really worrying trend of our folks and our friends on the other side of the aisle who are refusing to hold accountable millionaires and billionaires who have plenty of money to cover their own childcare costs, who can contribute graciously and generously to the state coffers, and so that people who need help and support the most can afford the high quality care that every child in Minnesota deserves. Members, we can move this bill out to tax committee, but it's certainly something that needs a lot more discussion.
Thank you. I'll renew my motion to re-refer House File 495 to the Committee on Taxes. As amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to taxes. Speed Queen, House File 1900, or no? Representative Johnson, obviously we're not going to get to your amendment. Thank you for being here. I mean, your bill, but we will make sure that we can find time tomorrow and the House Republicans will not belabor any points. Thank you for your patience. I appreciate your understanding. Representative Doe, sorry about all this, but please introduce your wonderful bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. There's a DE, and I would like to move that DE.
Representative Nadeau moves the DE1 amendment. Representative Doe.
Thank
DE2
you.
Amendment.
And then I have an. Do we need to vote on that or not?
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I do want to make an oral amendment. There was a last-minute thing that the agency picked up. And so I do have an oral amendment to strike lines 2.3 to 2.4 in the DE, and it's clarifying that prior convictions related to cannabis, marijuana, or tetrahydrocannabinoids are not misinterpreted as being ineligible for MFIP and SNAP. So I'm rewriting this section of statute to indicate who is eligible for MFIP and SNAP rather than who is subject to random drug testing. Okay, so that's why we don't need 2.3 and 2.4. And if the agency wants to concur, are they here? Just, I don't want to pull one over.
Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Nick Dem with DCYF. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Representative Nadeau described it exactly correctly. This statute used to speak to how people were required to be drug tested for public assistance. It's being rewritten to say who is now eligible for MFIP and SNAP. And so that line in the bill could be misinterpreted, as Representative noted, to mean that individuals who do have felony drug convictions related to marijuana or cannabis would be ineligible for SNAP. So the way that it's been kind of rewritten, it doesn't need that language anymore.
All right. Ms. Pinelli, could you summarize the amendment? Representative Nadeau moves the oral amendment, which will now be summarized.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment is on the DE2 amendment, page 2, strike lines 3 and 4.
Any discussion? All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment to the amendment is adopted. Go ahead, Representative Doe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to present House File 1900. This bill removes the optional drug testing requirement for individuals on SNAP who have a prior drug felony conviction within the last 10 years. First, I want to be clear about what this bill does not do. It doesn't change who is eligible for SNAP or how the program operates. It doesn't expand benefits or change the number of people who qualify. It's a policy-only bill. What this policy-only bill does is it undoes an unfunded mandate on counties and removes the optional drug testing requirement for SNAP participants with a prior drug felony conviction within the past 10 years. To give some background, in 1996, Congress created a lifetime ban on SNAP eligibility for people with a prior drug felony conviction. However, states can opt out or modify the federal ban. Today, 28 states have fully removed that ban. Minnesota has modified the ban, and under current law, anyone with a drug felony conviction within the last 10 years who receives SNAP may be subject to random drug tests. And the keyword there is may. At the discretion of the county county administration, no other type of felony carries this condition. In practice, this creates an uneven treatment across Minnesota's 87 counties. Whether someone faces random drug testing depends simply on where they live. Drug testing should be a tool for recovery when it's part of a treatment plan, not a county by county condition for food access. Clear and consistent eligibility rules for SNAP benefits can also help reduce error rates. This bill supports program integrity in our SNAP program. Lastly, this bill follows recommendations from the legislatively established task force on holistic and effective responses to illicit drug use, which included representation from medical experts, law enforcement, and the justice system, including prosecutors. This bill ensures that food assistance isn't conditioned on an optional random drug testing requirement that serves no public benefit. You'll see in the handout that a broad range of organizations support this bill, from business groups such as the Minnesota Grocers to agriculture and food organizations, including AgriGrowth and nonpartisan criminal justice reform organizations. And with that, I would like to turn it over to my testifiers, Mr. Chair.
Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid. We're here supporting House File 1900 and want to thank Representative Nadeau for bringing it. In the last two decades, I've watched Minnesota on a bipartisan basis develop a more nuanced and compassionate approach to substance use disorder and to addressing hunger. And the approach that Minnesota is now taking acknowledges that when people are fighting to get better, to stabilize their jobs, their housing, their families. We ensure that people have access to food as a core component of their healing and of their second chance in recovery. I'll just abbreviate my comments there and say this is a really good bill, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the record. And
good afternoon, Mr. Chair West and Madam Chair Cotiza Watun, along with esteemed committee members. My name is Moncés Franco. I work for Hennepin Healthcare Research Institute with the Health, Homelessness, and Criminal Justice Lab. I am also a person with a history of criminal convictions. I come to you in support of House File 1900. I am here to say that everyone has value, and there is no compromise to that statement. That includes everyone in this room, but it also includes people who use drugs and people with histories of involvement in the criminal legal system. I walked out of prison in 2018. I didn't come home because transitional housing was a stepping stone, but not a place that feels warm and cozy like when I think of when I hear the word home. On the road to becoming the person I am today, while navigating the complexities of unmet needs and competing priorities, I am most thankful that I was eligible for SNAP benefits, because in a short truth, it kept me from committing crimes of poverty, like stealing food, which was a reality for me at one point in time. And this here is, if you can see, it is my old EBT card. It is inactive, but it is a reminder that this was a hand up and not a career path. I have relatives that were not so fortunate and were disqualified from receiving SNAP benefits based on a felony drug conviction. The particular relative in mine is a female, a mother, and claimed responsibility for drugs that weren't hers because the father of her children already had two prior drug convictions. I do not excuse the behavior, nor do I judge the psychology behind that decision. Rather, I focus on the family separation that occurred and how a grandmother stepped up to become the primary caregiver and noticing that the family system was never the same since. And this is not a unique occurrence. It happened in my family and continues to happen in other families to this day. One observation from today's earlier testimony was that everyone around the table looked into the bag of snacks that was passed around to find their favorite snack. I also observed that no one had to do a drug test before digging into that bag. A 10-year random drug testing provision does nothing to address the complexities of a person who uses drugs. The comorbidities around substance use.
I hate to cut you off. It's actually my bad time management, but we have to be done at 5, and we want to pass this bill.
Thank you.
I apologize.
Thank you. What I would like to close with is that I know this on a personal level, that there are other ways to address the complexities of substance use and mental health. I know that personally because my brother died this year on February 11th. And that piece can be addressed in this room. Sometimes helping people means to remove one barrier to get the true help that is deserved for people who are struggling with comorbidities like substance use disorder and mental health. Thank you kindly for hearing me out.
Representative Doe, to close your bill.
Please vote yes and send this bill to the General Register.
Thank you. Representative Doe renews his motion to re-refer House File 1900 as amended to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion fails and the bill is on its way. Thank you all for enduring my poor time management.
Thank you.
And the committee is adjourned.